This is Bad Voltage Season 2, Episode 47, coming to you on Thursday, the 7th of February, 2019. I actually got the year right for... I heard this thing, right, where if you're writing a cheque, not that people write cheques very much anymore, but if you're writing a cheque, for all of January, you're allowed to get the year wrong and they'll let you off. Because everyone continues writing 2018 because they're so used to it.
That is fascinating and I can't believe true.
I do not know whether true or not. Anyway, right, so I'm Stuart Langridge.
I'm Jeremy Garcia.
And Jono's not here.
He is not.
Nah, slack bastard. So we are recording. This is only a very brief show to tide you over. We're doing a lot of preparation at the moment for our live show, which is coming up.
We are.
In only a few weeks, actually.
It's coming up quickly. But
it is.
I know that's going to be some sad news there that this isn't going to be a full show, but as a little bit of a bonus, you know, normally we would release on the 7th and then again on the 21st. What we're going to do is this little bit of a show with Stuart and I released, as you said, on the 7th. Then you get a full show on the 14th and a full show on the 21st. Just as a little bit of a lead up to Bad Voltage Live, we wanted to make sure you had enough of Bad Voltage to get you ready for the show.
Absolutely. So we should tell you about the live show. We're not going to tell you about anything that's in it yet, because we're still planning it. And the bits we haven't planned yet, we're still working out. The bits we have planned yet are a secret, and we're not telling you.
A hilarious, hilarious secret.
But the live show is happening at Scale, the Southern California Linux Expo, and our live show is on Friday the 8th of March 2019 in Pasadena, California. Now, if you're not going to Scale, you ought to be going to Scale, and we'll tell you why in a minute.
Yes.
But you can buy a ticket to Scale if you do that. If you haven't done that already and you want to, then you can use the coupon code, the voucher code BVOLT,
yes,
and you get a special ticket discount. Yes, you do. So you
half
should
off,
buy
right?
tickets
yeah.
for Scale. Yeah, you get a whole bunch of money off. And Scale's really cool. Are we all speaking? I'm speaking, I believe, John, but you're not, I don't think, are you?
No, this year I am not.
Yeah, so you get to enjoy it. But there's tons of stuff goes on at Scale.
Yes.
It goes on for a few days. There's like 9 tracks. If you look on the Scale website, there's a whole raft of speakers speaking, and all of them are pretty cool. You know, I every time I go to Scale, I really enjoy it. Now, I've only been going for a few years, but Jeremy, you've been going basically since the beginning, right?
I think Scale 4 was my first one. Might have been Scale 3, but I think it was 4. So quite a while, yeah. Well over a decade. And
yeah, this one, to be clear, this one that's happening now is Scale 17.
Yes.
So, yeah, so this is the 17th one of them. And Scale to me feels like a small community meeting, but scaled up.
I think that's one thing that keeps drawing me to Scale is it still has maintained that community feel while being properly run and getting a level of speaker, I think, that wouldn't be possible at a smaller event. And it's the confluence of those two things that I think keeps it really cool.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it. I like the fact that you can go along and hang out and just talk to people. And, I mean, with all these things, every conference you ever go to, the best track is the hallway track, right?
Yes.
And that at Scale's better because it's full of a bunch of people that you've heard of who are interesting to sit and have a chat and a coffee with and what have you, so on and so forth. And Pasadena's all right as a town.
Yeah, it is squarely all right, yes.
there's a couple of decent bars there. You can live with that. But, yeah, I like the experience of the conference. It's definitely worth going. Some people only go for a couple of days. Some people are there for the whole thing. I'm leaving on the Sunday.
I usually stay, but I'm leaving on the Sunday as well because I'm speaking at the Open Source Leadership Summit or whatever it is on Tuesday.
All right, nice. I'm actually speaking at Scale on Sunday morning, so I'm not leaving till the evening, but that'd be cool. But yeah, well, I mean, one of the things I'd like to hear is from people who are also going to scale or think you're going to scale, let us know. And, you know, we'll get together and have a pint. Come and see us.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be great. You know, I'm more than happy to chat to people around the rest of the conference, even given that we're not doing the live show. But yes, definitely come to the live show, Friday the 8th. It's at, I'm not sure exactly what time it's at. Do we know yet what time it's at?
They were going back and forth at the venue a little bit. I believe it's at 7. Doors at 7, but, you know, so, show at 8.
Yes, so keep an eye out on that. But yes, come to Scale. It's brilliant. Come and watch Bad Voltage live. It's brilliant.
Yep.
Go and look at the trailer. Look, go to badvoltage.org/live to find out more about it. And
absolutely. And I think another thing about Scale that is, I think, at least I forget it, maybe others don't, is that it used to be more of a Saturday-Sunday event. And now it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and proper days on Thursday, Friday. So Thursday, they're doing like a Kubeflow community day. They're doing a couple different workshops. Friday's actually DevOps Days LA and a couple other longer sessions. There's an IoT workshop, I know. There's actually a bunch of sessions on both days as well. So you don't have to, you know, if you want to make a day out of it on Friday and go to some of the workshops or tutorials or presentations, whatever, and then come to the show, that is an option. Because I always forget that they're proper days on Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, it's not just the weekend. I mean, obviously, you can just go for the weekend, but obviously, you'd want to show up on the Friday night to see the live show.
Yes.
But yes, some people drop in and drop out, so on and so forth. There's quite often you'll see people who are there and are working for some of the day, you know, so they can be there in the evenings or catch the talks that are really important to them, watch the keynotes, what have you. That's pretty cool.
I'm personally quite looking forward to the keynote this year. It's the founder of HashiCorp, which I think is a company just doing so many cool things between, you know, console is everywhere these days and Vault is gaining adoption. And just Hashi has done so much cool stuff. I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of a talk about how Vagrant was written while he was really in college in his dorm room and how he scaled, you know, the company up from basically $0 in revenue to what it is now. So I think they just, their last round of funding, what, they hit like a $2 billion valuation, I think. So for a company scaled out of a dorm room, that's quite impressive. And like I said, the technology that comes out of that company continues to just be awesome. So really looking forward to that personally.
Yes. So come to Scale. Now, you had, as we said, this is a slightly abbreviated show, but we do have a couple of pieces of news that we thought were worth bringing up.
Yeah, so the idea we had here, since it's just the two of us, is to, we throw news in a doc and kind of discuss it beforehand and everything. And this one, we're just going to throw out one news item we basically saw recently that we think is either interesting or whatever, but the other person doesn't know, and then we're going to get their quick take on it.
Yes, so go on then.
So sure, I'll go first, since it was my idea. And here, this one is interesting, I think, maybe for listeners, because I bang on about Essential nonstop, and it sometimes seems that Essential probably sold two phones, one to Andy's mom and one to me, but it remains, I think, one of the best phones I've ever had. The 360 camera is awesome. The phone itself is a great form factor. The notch they actually pulled off, I think, better than anyone yet. And considering Apple makes a phone with a notch and Google makes a phone with a notch, I think that's a pretty impressive thing. But anyways, they're clearly struggling as a company, despite the high quality of the phone. Didn't sell very well. They dropped the price almost immediately, et cetera, et cetera. So I was fascinated to see today it was released in what I would consider somewhat of a strange move. They had purchased a company called Cloud Magic in December. Today, they have revived their main product, which was called Newton Mail, which is a $50 a year mail service. So I'm not exactly sure why they would do this or revenue they think this will bring. But I wasn't, to be clear, familiar with Newton Mail. I looked it up very briefly. It runs on iOS, Android, Mac, and Windows as well. And it's $50 a year, and it says they are quote-unquote integrating it with Essential and working on new features. I don't know how you quote-unquote integrate a mail app into a phone any more than just preloading it onto the phone, I guess.
I don't know. Okay, so I didn't know about this at all. I'm kind of with you. I don't think I understand. So this is what these Newton Mail people. What do you get for your $50?
Newton Mail.
Yeah, but what's the terrible marketing phrase? What's their USP?
I don't know. It says they have integrations with OmniFocus, Giphy, Things to Do, and Bear, which I don't even know what that is. And the features that they tout are, like, one of them is a button to delete a single email within a thread.
That's, huh. So, as far as I can tell, there are two different sorts of paid-for mail services. You've got ones who are focused around mail privacy. Their big pitch is we are not Gmail, and we do a good job of making sure that your mail is encrypted. And so people like Tutanota.
Yes.
Right? And that's their pitch. And for people who want that, they pay for it. And that's worth it, right?
So like ProtonMail or FastMail, for people who don't know what he's talking about, I would say are the two most prevalent I can think of.
Yeah. And then the second class of people who want you to pay for mail apps are not necessarily providing a mail service, although they may be. Their pitch is better UI, basically, a decent user experience. This is what Sparrow Mail were.
Yes.
Until they got swallowed.
Trying to think of the name of it, and it was Sparrow.
It was Sparrow Mail. And so it sounds like these people, that's their pitch, but that's a really difficult pitch to pull off. And I mean, essential, their vibe has kind of been, hey, our thing's cooler, and it's not from the big companies, but it has spectacularly failed to ignite the market. You're not kidding about the fact that Andy Rubin's mum and you are the only people who bought them. I've never seen one in the wild other than yours.
I keep thinking I'll run into one other one, because it's a very easy phone to spot from a distance, because it really looks like no other phone. I've certainly never ran into someone who had one.
I don't get who sits there and says, okay, we've built a phone. It genuinely is a really good, technically accomplished, easy to use product, but no one cares. The way we solve this is by having a slightly different looking mail.
I am curious what their go-to market strategy is here. I don't even really have a guess.
Well, presumably, you know, they're running out of money, so they went, okay, we're going to fire the marketing department, replace them with a magic eight ball, and see what comes out. I fundamentally don't understand that. This is one of those things where every now and again, so I want to make this kind of bizarre decision that I just don't get. And then I'll read an article and it'll contextualize it all for me. And I'll go, oh, I get it now, but this doesn't sound gettable.
If you come across that article for this topic, you please forward that to me.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. But essentially going away, man. Just grasp the nettle on this. Well, you remember how sad I was when my Nokia N9, I finally realized that this is untenable at this point.
Yes.
Despite the fact that it was a delightful device with delightful UI and everything, it just wasn't worth it. You are now in the same position. Welcome to it. So my thing is a piece of news that you will know about, but my reaction to it might be slightly surprising. You know, the Apple FaceTime bug?
Yep.
Well, I've heard a lot of people going on about, who would think that Apple, with their supposed devotion to privacy, have let this kind of bug go through and everything. But as far as I can tell, it's just a bug, and it's not a serious bug, and they fixed it really quickly. And everyone piling on is not doing so because they think it's a real problem. They're piling on because they basically don't like Apple.
Wait, did you say it's not a serious bug?
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't know if I agree with that. Well, can you explain to me your interpretation of what the bug is, and then we can decide if it's a big bug?
Right.
The listeners might not have seen it.
Yes, so as I understand it, and I may be misunderstanding this, but as I understand it, the FaceTime application, if someone rings you, well, this is how the bug manifested itself. If someone rings you and you don't pick up the call and you don't reject the call, but you hit the power button instead, then it would essentially connect the call under the covers and not tell you that it had done it.
Yes.
So the person on the other end would start hearing what was happening around the phone.
Secondly,
as I understand it, and again, I might be wrong about this, what you did was you got to hear it for a few seconds. It didn't just stay connected forever until you hung up. Now, this is, to me, this is not so much a privacy bug as it's potentially terribly embarrassing. You reject a call and then you turn, you believe you rejected a call and then you turn to your friend next to you and go, thank God I don't have to talk to them, and they hear you saying it.
I think any bug that results in your camera and microphone surreptitiously turning on without your knowledge is, whatever your classification system is, the most severe bug that could possibly happen.
Well, I take your point, but people are talking about this as though it's a deliberately executable privacy violation. Like, I can, when someone says FaceTime's got a bug where I can turn on your camera and microphone and you don't know, it makes it sound like I can do it without you having any idea that it was the case and just stick a bug in your pocket and have it follow you around.
And, oh, so it's not that, no.
No, but all the descriptions of it are subtly trying to imply that it's that kind of bug without coming out and saying it, because it isn't. And so when I found out what it was, I went, well, that's not that big a problem. I know who's rung me. Yeah, fine, it didn't hang up and it should have done. But we have, I believe, on the show before now, told the story about how I was in a department store and Jono rang me and...
Yes, we have.
And I tried to hang up the phone and it didn't hang up, right? And so Jono was shouting things out while I'm standing there in Debenham was trying to shut my phone up, and I eventually had to take the battery out, right? That was terribly embarrassing for me. It was made considerably more embarrassing by the fact that Jono's a wanker and took complete advantage of it. However, at no point did I go around saying to people, this is a terrible security bug on the part of Symbian and Nokia.
Right.
This is a terrible privacy bug, even though it's exactly the same kind of thing, right?
Yep.
It was embarrassing and stupid, but I wasn't holding pitchforks aloft and marching on the castle with burning torches because of it. And this, to me, feels like the same thing. It's being painted as a privacy bug, and actually it's just a stupid bug. And they seem to have reacted to it pretty quickly. I mean, this is a bug. It's a stupid bug. Apple looks stupid for having done it.
Yes.
Their QA people need a kick in the ass for not catching it.
Yes.
But I think painting it as first and foremost a privacy bug misrepresents the kind of thing that it is.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think because they've chosen to have privacy be such a big part of the brand, people are latching onto that. I think a lot of the way the news cycles are now, making it a privacy bug makes it more likely that you're going to get a click on that article, which is probably not how news should work, but is currently how news works. I don't think I would classify it necessarily. I mean, it's a software bug that has privacy implications. I don't know that it's a privacy bug, and it certainly wasn't an intentional privacy misstep.
The
14-year-old discovered this, and I think they're giving him a bug bounty, they said.
Yeah, they were supposed to be meeting up with him, I believe, and giving him some money and everything, and fair play. Now, that's really... realistically, what I'd like to be able to say, just don't have bugs. Stuff doesn't work like that.
Not in the cards.
It is hard to think of how, given the fact that this terribly embarrassing bug that makes you look stupid exists, how you could deal with it significantly better than that. Unfortunately, what it's going to make Apple do now even more is refuse to talk to people and do more QA and keep things more secret and so on. The very fact that this happened will hopefully make them double down on the privacy stuff, which is a good thing.
Yes.
Yes. So anyway, that was my thing. I just felt slightly... Normally, I don't like it when Apple has a problem and a bunch of people attempt to explain it away, and their motivation is clearly, but I like Apple, and therefore I'm going to put the best positive thing on this.
Right.
But this, to me, seemed like the opposite. A whole bunch of people going, because I don't like Apple, I'm going to put the worst possible explanation on this. And the truth, as ever, is somewhere in between.
I would agree.
Yes. So, That's my news item. So we should let people go and book their tickets for Bad Voltage Live, right?
We should. I mean, I hope that just amazing description before that everyone's already booked, I would assume, right?
while listening, so yes, go to badvoltage.org/live and let us know. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention, we did the predictions in the last show and we're going to review them a year from now and that's all fine.
Ah, yes, but, so we almost forgot about this.
Everyone in the whole world appears to have either shown up in our Slack channel or on the Bad Voltage forums to say, you know how Jono predicted that Slack would file for an IPO? They have filed for an IPO and it's February.
But have they?
Well, I don't quite understand this. Apparently they filed for a thing, but it's not an IPO or whatever.
Yeah, they're just doing it direct.
I don't know what that means.
So they're not going through a traditional IPO, you hire someone like Goldman to structure an IPO and then a NASDAQ or whatever, they handle all the regulatory stuff. This they're selling directly through a bidding process to people. Do you remember what Google did?
No.
Oh. So they're eschewing the traditional initial public offering system for a more direct system. There's no lockout for employees, which is one key difference, but there's quite a few differences. If you're interested in finance, look it up. It is a different way to do things.
So this is, you know, Crowdcube or however, things like that, where you essentially have to crowdfund, sell bits of your business. There's no reason why you can't do this, right? I mean, you can sell shares in your company by just having a box on your website that do it and not have to ring KPMG at all to help you.
I mean, you could do that, but that wouldn't be... So they still will be a public company at the end of this.
Right, oh, okay.
But there's not going to be... Like I said, there's not going to be an underwriter. So a direct listing, you just sell shares. The initial shares you sell directly from Slack, the company, to the public, the people. There's no underwriter. There's no, like, that whole IPO process doesn't exist.
Okay. No, I mean, to be honest with you, the reason I bring this up is because I'm preparing for the fight a year from now when Jono goes, well, obviously this qualifies. And we go, nah, because it was weird.
Right. I mean, it's definitely not a traditional IPO, but it will result in a public company. So I suspect, and it is funny that this happened so quickly after the prediction.
The first
one of them that I announced an IPO did it in this way is funny.
That is remarkable, yes. So people are arguing on our Slack channel. They have been arguing today about whether this qualifies for Jono's prediction. I mean, I'm temperamentally inclined to just say, no, it doesn't, because it will annoy Jono. And he's not here.
So. Right, yes.
Yes, so come to Bad Voltage Live. You really should do.
Yep.
And we'll be back in a week. Hooray.
We will.
For more shows. So we'll see you then. This is Bad Voltage signing off.